Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Juranov, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when they're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you want to download it to your computer, or iPod, PDA, anything that you want to listen to it on. Today we have an excellent show as we talk to three different records managers who work for or have worked for sophisticated companies. In the past, we've talked about records management on ESI Byte shows, but we invariably seem to attract outside lawyers who preach approaches which in theory can help organizations deal with e-discovery, but now we have a chance to listen to the insider's perspective on how this works in practice. Hearing how effective records management can minimize headaches associated with e-discovery. Hopefully we'll talk about some tips on implementing a records management program and whether we're making progress with records management of ESI. I should note that the opinions expressed in the show are the individual opinions of the panelists, not of their respective organizations. The first panelist is Jane Connerton, who has over 20 years' experience in the field of records and information management. She's the corporate records manager for Procter & Gamble. She's launched and operated programs in retention scheduling, e-records guidelines, micrographics, e-discovery, standardizing, and enforcing compliance with global policies and procedures. She's currently revamping the research and development record services to centralize and electronically deliver the most critical upstream intellectual property coming from 22 R&D facilities worldwide while launching a document management schema. It's a wonder she has time to do this podcast. Additionally, she consults with various divisions on how to improve information creation and flow for higher efficiency and reduced liability. Her team has won multiple industry awards in the areas of records management, and she's the first person I approached to do this show a while ago, and I'm thrilled we're finally doing it. The second panelist is Steve Ferguson, the corporate records officer at Nationwide, a Columbus, Ohio-based insurance and financial services company. Steve has been with Nationwide for 13 years in a variety of legal roles, and like Jane, he made the case for a records management investment at his company. He helped to create the RIM department at Nationwide, and now he manages a team of RIM associates. The last panelist, Bruce Whitney, set up the records management program at Air Products. Bruce started his legal career at the Philadelphia office of Morgan, Lewis & Bockius in the litigation, government regulation, and banking practice areas of the firm from 1971 until 1976. While there, he represented transportation companies, banks, utilities, and petrochemical companies, including Air Products. In 1976, he was invited to join Air Products Law Group to manage litigation, as well as major commercial and government contractual matters. In 1978, he was asked to form its first litigation group and supervise all of Air Products litigation in North America. In the records management and e-discovery space, Bruce wrote Air Products' first paper-age record retention policies in the 70s and upgraded them over the last 5 years to address electronic documents and the amendments of the federal discovery rules regarding electronic evidence. He also proposed and implemented a government structure to manage records retention, warehouse operations, and e-discovery involving litigation holds. He's investigated and selected appropriate software to manage both the corporate data map and records retention related to stored records, as well as to manage litigation holds and their cessation after suits are settled. Bruce participated in the identification and retirement of legacy data systems being replaced by SAP. He also managed the production of both paper and electronic evidence in all lawsuits using a variety of vendors, depending on the jurisdiction and law firms involved. Bruce has also put together presentations on records retention policies to the general counsels of the members of the American Chemistry Council and has spoken all over the country and internationally on e-discovery. Thank you, all of you, for joining us on the show. I'm thrilled to be doing it. And first of all, since you're each new to the show, why don't you tell me how you first got involved with electronic discovery, and why don't we do the order I introduce you? So, Jane, you can go first.
Well, thanks. We've been running the records management program for a few years as the discussion of e-discovery came to be in the courts. And legal had always come to us for paper, and so it was a logical progression of the services that we had here. When you look at the EDRM map, it starts with good records and information management. So we created a service, actually, for the legal group, and we actually support them as a service to provide that integration between their needs and delivering the e-discovery.
Okay, and Stephen, your story?
Well, as an attorney with two different insurance companies for about 13, well, maybe more like 15 or 16 years involved in claims and litigation, I guess I came at this first as an individual file handler. Even before the way before the federal rules were amended to address ESI, there was a lot of electronic discovery going on. So as an individual case handler with different insurance companies handling pieces of litigation, I suppose I learned the hard way that a lot of the stuff we were looking for was electronic. I got involved in several projects at my current employer and eventually got involved in the building of the formalized compliance function, records and information management. And then I realized really it's the phrase I like to use is just two sides of the same coin. I mean, you're dealing with records on the front end in a hopefully a productive and functioning records and information management department, or you're dealing with them on the back end in litigation and discovery. And I like to think that a functioning RIM department or information management compliance, whatever you call it, hopefully some of the people most grateful to that department would be the folks handling discovery, all discovery, including electronic discovery, and they would be the beneficiary of that. So first as an individual file handler and then later as the manager of the RIM department, realizing that the stuff, the actions we took really had an impact on the litigation we saw downstream.
And Bruce, how did you get into this area?
Well, I like that description about e-discovery being the back end. In fact, I've always thought of it as the tail that should not wag the dog. The entire dog is records management globally, which is an enormous undertaking. And as you produce evidence in court in various jurisdictions, it really is a nit compared to the complexity of running a wonderful records management program. When did I first get involved? Similarly, it's not a new topic. Electronic information existed in the 70s and 80s, and as sophistication of search engines grew, so did the outside vendor population. And as the amendment of the federal rules brought to us, I referred to it in-house as a vendor-inspired hysteria. No one listened to me that, hey, calm down, we can handle this. But no. I was drafted to bring together all the records managers globally to come up with a committee system by which we could manage ESI. That was about 8 years ago.
Okay, great. So Jane, let's jump right into the dog that is involved with the tail of e-discovery. What are some tips for effective records management implementation?
Well, the first thing you always want to do in any type of an implementation of this caliber is to make sure you've got senior management support. And you can do that by, finding out what the pain points are. What are the wicked problems of your organization that the senior management team is afraid of? I always say never forget to leverage a good crisis. You know, whether it was the result of regulatory audits or litigation, the IRS came in, whatever it is, records management oftentimes comes out of a negative situation. Take it as you can get it. Enron provided a lot of backbone for a lot of records management programs out there. Hopefully it's happening in your industry, not necessarily to you, but either way, take that and run with it. Identify the ways that you can better help achieve the company's objectives for the years by making information more readily available or kept in a manner that is more readily accessible, and make sure that you're getting things out in a timely fashion. One of the cornerstones is to have a retention schedule. How can you be evaluating the cost of electronic systems if you don't know at what volume the data is going to grow and how many years you need to sustain it and what your future migration is going to be as you sunset that product? Join up with groups. We talked about how legal is potentially a client of records management, but they're also one of the inputs that you have into developing a good records management program. If you're doing a retention schedule, obviously, you want legal and quality and regulatory input, and tax, but you also want to make sure that you've got organizations, if you're a large organization and you're siloed, information security, privacy, IT, if you aren't working in conjunction with them to develop your program, you're probably not going to be as comprehensive as you'd like to. I encourage everyone that's considering records management to learn the language of IT. Because so many records are created and kept electronically, these are your partners. You've got to join up with them And they will respect you more if you can talk some of their language. And lastly, I think the tip to a good implementation is to keep it simple. Keep it simple in your communication. If you can automate the records retention schedule or other lifecycle management processes for people, let them focus on their core competencies. They're running the business. They're making whatever product or service that your organization is delivering. They don't have time or energy to focus on records management. As important as it is of a risk management issue, the more you can prioritize it and make it a non-discretionary decision, the better off you're going to have in your compliance long term.
Okay, those were good tips. I don't know if anyone else has any other tips, because that's sort of an open-ended question.
This is Bruce. I agree with everything that was just said, and I would underscore the importance of senior management supporting records management, because without that, you're going to have a very difficult time trying to tack together, especially if you're a global corporation, the various records managers, plural, into an overall system. And at Air Products, what brought that to the forefront, believe it or not, was Sarbanes-Oxley, which, of course, the finance people groaned about in all the governance procedures. And then came along the amendment of the federal rules, and frankly, I tried to put that back in finance and told them it was just another governance procedure, have a nice time. And I lost that battle, and I was given the task of improving the existing management program at Air Products. And that only took a mere 3 years. My first item of business was to find a real records manager, which we ultimately did.
Okay.
You know, the only thing I'll comment, this is Steve, is I like the quote. A very popular political quote, never let a crisis go to waste, I think by Rahm Emanuel. I think Jane is spot on. There's a lot going on in the world. I'd like to know if Bruce and Jane, one phrase I've used in talking to different people in the industry is, it seems, and maybe people just kind of look at their own times they're in and think they're more important than others, but it seems that in the last 5 years, maybe 10, that records management has kind of risen from the mailroom to the boardroom. So Jane talked about senior management approval. It seems to be there's a lot more C-level and board-level awareness of the compliance risks of poor records management. Jane, are you seeing that as well?
It is, but you know what? You still have to prove yourself at the table. People, when you say records management, still think file clerk, and it is much more in-depth and professional these days, and you've got to present it as such and be able to talk the language of the CXO floor as well.
Well, this is Bruce. I agree with the senior management. It has gone up to the board level at Air Products. Air Products has what's called a compliance committee. Compliance with what? Everything. And the board of directors asked the senior officers of the company to identify the most material risks that could adversely affect the franchise, the entire business enterprise. And a long time ago, records management never made it on stage. And then with the advent of the ESI under the amended rules, suddenly there was another box on the risk matrix called records management. Unfortunately, my name was the first one to appear in that box, and annually, anyone who has their name in a material risk box has to report to the board on progress in management in your area. So, by procedure, it is in front of the board every year annually.
And I just, Steve Ferguson here, I'm sure that's happening in more and more companies as Dodd-Frank gets enacted and lots of other things are changing in the world. It seems to be more trending in that direction. So, interesting.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, since you're sitting in the hot seat there, reporting back, is records management the savior and holy grail to the e-discovery challenges that litigants who are sophisticated companies face? I mean, is the battle over if you do this?
Well, the battle is never over with ESI. In fact, I want to back up just a few decades, perhaps, when we were in the paper age. In the paper age, you could never produce all of anything, but no one jumped out windows about it. We would just explain to the other side that, A, nobody in this company could even list the geographic locations, plural, of all the paper repositories, which may still be the same today. things got worse when we moved into ESI land, because with the advent of laptops and mobile devices, we really couldn't with any certainty say that we were going to lock down and produce all of anything. So, yes, the records management program is essential. If you don't have a good records management program, you're really going to be in a painful situation. But even with a highly effective records management program, we went to the extent of doing an animated exhibit called The Day in the Life of a Microsoft Email to demonstrate to magistrates and judges who sometimes don't seem to understand the complexity of what they're ordering that there are at least 20 different ways clever employees can end run almost anything you try to do by way of preservation. Most of the time, in fact, 99% of the time, unwittingly taking stuff off before the email janitor takes it off the system, and they'll put it in a thumb drive and throw it in their desk, etc. So we start out any lawsuit by telling the magistrates that during the course of this, there will be new evidence found, and there will be things that we didn't even know existed, and as we discover them, we shall tell you about them.
So it's sort of like having a good net, but there are always going to be little fish that are going to get through the net, but if you don't have a net, you're really in trouble.
Well, sometimes they're big fish because IT doesn't know all the systems that are out there. It's not the fault of IT. It's not really their business to be an adjunct of the judicial system. They're there to support the business areas, and occasionally, more than occasionally, the business areas think that in-house IT is too expensive, so they outsource it to somebody, and then they don't tell IT. So nobody even knows the system's cranking away with an outside vendor.
Hey, Bruce, this is Steve Ferguson. Without getting into, obviously, specific litigation, generally speaking, maybe it's hard to generalize, are folks receptive to that argument? It's very reasonable. We all get it. And, it makes a lot of sense. But I'm interested into the general reception to that. Like, okay, I understand. Keep me informed. Or unacceptable, I want it all.
Well, some we were just in – I'm no longer at Air Products. I do stay in touch with my successors, however. And, oh, heavens, I hope that truck is not causing too much noise. The problem we have is that some magistrates and judges do not comprehend the complexity of what they are ordering. But I would say that's a minority. And I think the reception at your first e-discovery meeting is receptive to that, because that's just the way it is. We can't capture all. We can't freeze the entire corporation. There will be things that we will discover along the way. I've found that it's, and the other thing I would add to that is pick one law firm as your e-discovery law firm so you don't have to teach every law firm in the country over and over again, and let them present it to the judicial sector to let them understand that we have spent time and money educating this law firm, and this is the way it is.
And I'll also jump in here that records management and e-discovery go very nicely together. I mean, when you're doing a records inventory so that you can create your records retention schedule, you're essentially doing a records map. Now, a records map tends to have a little more technical information on it, but it's a logical progression. And one of the programs, or one of the goals of a good records management program is to reduce the volume of records so that you operate more efficiently and you only have what's necessary to run the business, both from a business driver and from a legal and regulatory requirement standpoint. What that equates to is when you come down to e-discovery, you've got fewer records to search through, and you hopefully have more relevant documents to produce, and you're not wasting your money on doing over-collections, and you've got more proportionality when you're delivering it to outside counsel to do review.
So, Steve, do you want to add anything on what can be delivered with a successful record management program?
Sure. I think, and not in any particular order, I think when I think about that question, I think the first thing that jumps into mind, I mean, it depends on the industry, I suppose, and the posture and where you are. But I think the first thing that jumps to my mind is a better legal posture for the company. And I'm going to quote a gentleman. I don't know him personally. He wrote the introduction to a book. The book was Information Nation by Randy Kahn, but I've liked this quote so much I've used it a dozen times. And the introduction was written by, I believe he was a chief compliance officer at a financial services company. His name is Jay Cohen. But the quote that I've used multiple times because it really made an impact on me is that, you know, he said that his job was to make it as least likely as possible that associates violated, you know, their information management compliance obligations. So, you know, there's training, there's communications, there's a place to go to get answers, and that hopefully those violations, if ever, were very infrequent. But that if they did happen, something was destroyed, something wasn't saved for the right amount of time, that it was viewed as an individual problem and not an institutional problem. And we all get that, right? So that we have a program in place that you know, we're doing the right things, we're addressing the right things, we're making resources available. I like Jane's comment before, I couldn't agree with it early on about keep it simple. Very, very important. So I think the first thing is this better legal posture for the company. I mean, in litigation, people will be judging this program. If you're in an industry that has some type of regulatory review, market conduct exams, other types of regulatory exams, people will be judging this program. It's possible in the news media or in the press, people will be judging this program. Jane talked about the similarities or the connections between information risk management and privacy. I mean, if there's a privacy breach or disclosure and there's negative press, components of your program may factor into that. So this whole better legal posture for the company, I think is first and foremost that can be delivered. I think there's obvious comments you can make about cost. Again, if you're a company that has accumulated large physical storage volumes, lots of records, and I think a lot of companies have, there's a lot of money being made by vendors in offsite storage. There's a lot of paper records still out there. There's an opportunity for cost reduction. So if you have a robust retention schedule and you're following the destruction process and you're obeying legal holds, you probably can clean out a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of opportunity for cost savings in the physical record space, especially if you're paying an outside third party for storage. And I think there's an opportunity in the electronic space. It's sometimes difficult to quantify that savings in the electronic space. It may be easier to quantify physical storage savings, but I think there's obviously an opportunity. And then somebody, I can't remember if it was Bruce or Jane, talked about, you know, organizational order and efficiency. I think Jane mentioned if you have a program and you're following it, and people know where to call to get answers, and it makes sense, then you're going to have less stuff. And hopefully you'll be able to find that less stuff will be more relevant, more important to your business, and you'll be able to find it easier. So I think those are the types of things you can deliver to a company with an effective records management program.
Jane, everyone's quoting you for tips on from your tips in the beginning. So let's look at you on the other side of the coin. What challenges still remain, even with a records management program in place?
We kind of touched on it. You're still going to have silos of information, especially in a large organization. People like to have systems that meet their specific needs. It's going to go into different repositories. Technology enthusiasts are always out there trying to find the best, you know, bells and whistles on a system. And I think the job is to try and be able to find that information in a timely and efficient manner and be able to produce it for a case. If you don't have a plan or a strategy or an index for collecting that information, you are going to have a lot of costs on the back end. We always talk about records management, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. The efforts that you put forth up front make a difference. There's a cost to records management. I mean, for small and medium-sized companies and balancing the e-discovery costs, some have elected to actually put more energy towards records management because they find that not only do they get a more targeted repository perhaps by doing a document management system or some kind of an enterprise-wide system to maintain their information and it's readily available for e-discovery, they also have the productivity gains. So, you know, it's always a challenge. You know, with a big company, you said, I'm not going to change Queen Mary on a dime here, so I've got to learn how to deal with all these separate silos. I think, and it's hard for medium companies to have litigation a little more discreetly or infrequently. For them, they're not building an infrastructure on an ongoing basis that deals with litigation. application on an ongoing basis. It's more of a discrete event that comes up. They need focused resources, and they have a sense of urgency to do it, and it takes the internal focus away from delivering the product or service that they get paid for into this side business. And if you don't have a strategy to deal with that on an ongoing basis and maybe look at outside services that could help you through that, you're going to have plenty of challenges, even with a records management program in place.
This is Bruce. I'd like to underscore comments already made and take them a notch higher. Without an effective records management system in place and an effective response to ESI, you are destroying, potentially, the credibility of your company for all time in a particular lawsuit or in a whole series of lawsuits. If anyone doubts it, just read that decision in Morgan Stanley. The thing that supports records management at Air Products is not the effectiveness of responding to litigation, because that I've discovered was a yawn. Like, Bruce, well, that's your job, just do it. The institutional knowledge of the corporation will be lost, particularly as all the baby boomers retire and walk out the door, unless you know where to find the critical information that made your company successful. That is what really sold the importance of records management at Air Products.
So now you're sitting in the hot seat, Bruce, and you talked about how different people were involved and then it ended up in your lap in legal. How does records management interact with the other stakeholders in the e-discovery process? Depending on where you're sitting, we talk about IT, outside counsel, business people, legal, the people who are in charge. Who is in charge?
Well, those are all good questions. In fact, I'll just go back to an important detail of records management, of course, is having a records retention schedule. And as you get into organizing your program, you'll find that there are at least 5 to 15 of those, and they're all different and they conflict. And our experience was not unique in the petrochemical patch. So I made a presentation at the General Counsel's Roundtable of the American Chemistry Council, suggesting that we should all the companies and their records managers get together and coordinate classes of information so that when we say we're holding something for X number of years, it comes close, not quite, but comes close to becoming an industry standard. I'm not talking about the legal minimum, but if we could have done that, and that was a project ongoing when I retired, then a lot of the tension you referred to would go out of the system. But the short answer to your question, how do all those different groups interact? One word, uneasily. Nobody in-house really wants to stand up and say they're in charge of responding to judicial requests for information. And it's not the fault of IT. That's really not part of their function. The real tension is between outside counsel and the in-house resources. And this has changed in the last years I was at Air Products. Outside counsel saw what was happening to their brethren, getting sometimes fined, certainly criticized for allowing things to disappear. So the cure for that, they thought, was simply not to get involved. And the in-house staff, whether it was IT, law, records management, was being put upon more to stand up and certify that they had done the impossible, produce all of anything. And that tension still persists, which is what led me to going to one law firm. So I could take that tension out of the outside counsel, in-house counsel problem across the country.
Okay. And Stephen, what are the biggest challenges that still remain within records management?
Well, the good news is none. I think we've solved everything. It should be smooth sailing from here on out. In the industry.
Okay, use this one. Why we laugh at that response. Okay.
I suppose, from my perspective, I think you talked about it, Carl, in the introduction, and as I listened to your introduction, the difference between theory and reality. And I and some of the conversation and this I've been really, you know, there's been a lot of talk about reality. I think Bruce talked about vendor induced hysteria. I know I like that term so much. I've seen it multiple times, and I'm sure we'll see it again if we stick around long enough in this business. So I think it's the difference between theory and reality. In many ways, you might see that kind of pop up. One is and we all know this. I mean, we all get solicitations from IT vendors about products and services and how they can solve all our problems. I think that's it's amazing the tremendous advancements in the last 5 years in some of these technological products really there has been a lot of advancements, but I still think there's obviously a lot of promises out there. That completely can't be fulfilled. I think there's even a lot of disappointment from talking to colleagues in the industry about even implementation inside companies with homegrown solutions. I'll bring a kind of a physics example in. If we had a closed system where, you know, technology wasn't advancing, things weren't changing, we could put all litigation on hold and probably could solve a lot of problems. But things are always moving. We're buying new technologies, and I don't mean my particular company, but companies are merging. Employees come in, employees go out. People use records or use communication tools in a way to create records that wasn't anticipated. And I think just staying abreast of all this and trying to stay relevant is probably the biggest challenge, and continuing to prove that you're adding value to the organization. I think something else that comes into play right now, and maybe this is good and maybe this is bad, is the current business climate. Money's tight in the industry and in all companies. There's a lot of uncertainty. Jane talked earlier about proving yourself over and over again and making sure that you stay relevant or a RIM program stays relevant. Is it easier to do that in this current business environment or harder? Money seems to be more scarce, but maybe it's easier because we have to focus more on compliance. But I think the kind of the difference between theory and reality and the current business climate and where we're going and how long, you know, we'll stay in this current business climate are putting real pressure on RIM departments from conversations I've had. I think the other thing I'll mention real quick is and I did a presentation a while ago, and I used the phrase the perfect storm, and later on I saw a senior I had some folks from a vendor company in that presentation. Later on, I saw a senior person from that company use it, so I like to think they liked it. And I had a slide about increasing regulation going on, and now we've seen Dodd-Frank in the regulatory space, you know, passed, and everyone's wondering what that's going to mean. Expectation by the public, maybe even by judges. Bruce talked about judges' expectation that there might be an easy button that you can produce that kind of locks everything down. And volume. There's just so much more potential records being created, social media, social conversations, cloud computing, all these buzzwords that are out there. And all these things are coming together to form this perfect storm, which I think makes it very, very difficult for, all these pieces are moving in different directions, and it makes it very difficult for a RIM department to make a lot of traction. So I don't know if Jane or Bruce has any comments on those three concepts or what else they see as some of the challenges.
This is Bruce. Go ahead, Jane.
I'll add that records management is an art, not a science. It's a combination, as you talked about, of the emerging technologies with the culture of your organization and the IT landscape of your organization. If there was a single answer for records management, we'd put it in a book and we'd apply it across every business, and a lot of us would be out of a job. It'd be a beautiful thing if it could happen for the companies. But the reality is that it's truly an art to say, how do I match up, like you said, the theory with practice within this particular organization's culture for control and for access to information versus the tools that are available today versus how the people are using those tools to manage the information.
You know, I want to throw out one thing about the theory and the reality. It just struck me. Further down the chain from records management, when you're actually in litigation, you're evaluating the data, I've been experimenting with teaching judges about litigation tools, concept clustering, you know, offering some training to get at this defensibility issue of whether using tools that search through information more accurately than simple keyword searching, where pulling the roulette wheel. I mean, you're almost pulling the lever and hoping you find what you want, but you know you're missing a lot of it. And the reaction, you know, the pushback is, well, this is a black box, and we need to use Daubert to try to test and validate. One lawyer responded, a very, very bright lawyer, said, this is why I've always said the answer's in records management. And there's where, but when you hear Jane say it's an art, not a science, it's interesting how complex this entire system is from beginning to end, and the hopes that people have in different compartments solving it, you know? So I don't, there was a question in there somewhere, but I'm on my soapbox here. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with what you're saying. This is Bruce. I think expectations have exceeded reality. And again, hopefully the vendors don't get too mad at me, but due in large part to people selling panaceas that don't exist. And judges and magistrates read that, and they think you're hiding the ball somehow when you come in complaining that a lot of what they're seeking is impossible to do. I'll take that a step further. I think the ESI hot button in litigation is one of the things that's going to kill the federal judicial system. Let that ring out there.
Wow. Please elaborate.
Because, well, I see a shift away from large corporations, in my experience, didn't like arbitration because it tended to be arbitrary. It was aptly named. However, in arbitration, you can customize the rules. And the first rule that you can customize, and if you go to the Center for Public Resources, is to not only stringently limit discovery, but you could even ban electronic discovery in your customized dispute resolution system. And I'm a member of a group of international chief litigation counsel that in international arbitration, that's where they're headed. They would like to just ban discovery.
But they have that control, but not in litigation. Is that what you're...
in litigation.
Gotcha.
But it is driving companies more toward customized dispute resolution systems than in the past.
Hmm.
And it's due to this problem. If you bring this topic up in Europe, wow, that is producing electronic evidence to assist in dispute resolution. Hot button there, and they just... And I agree with them. And that's probably why they invited me onto their board. They couldn't believe I was a U.S. lawyer and agreed that there should be no discovery.
Well, so, Bruce, do you believe that technology can solve this records manager's challenge today? Is it too complex? I mean, we were talking about acquisitions when we talked about this show and the complexity that adds that technology almost can't solve.
Well, there's no single button, as we've all agreed. Technology can assist, but there's no cure for divestitures and acquisitions. If you acquire a company that's running on a totally different record system, or none at all, or it's run with a whole bunch of U-Stort villages across Arizona, as you acquire hodgepodges like that, there's no single technological button that's going to give assistance, and they're all running on different technologically assisted records programs. And we went to SAP, and in that trade, a single instance of SAP across the globe, and they're still doing it. And that is retiring, I'll call them out of sync electronic systems, and setting them aside for a certain period of time. I forget what software we bought, but after that period of time expires, boom, they tell me, but I don't believe it, that it was totally expunged and disappeared. There is no, in my judgment, single electronic product or device that can solve the real-world problems of being an effective records management department.
Well, and, thank goodness for that.
Yeah. There's no HAL in 2000 Space Odyssey, so you're all going to have jobs. So you want to retire like Bruce and do consulting. But so Jane, and I've read surveys in the past about numbers of companies that haven't still developed well-thought-out records management systems. You know, what are some of the easier tips you can suggest that maybe they can start wading in to address a records management challenge?
you know, if you've started a program or you've made a run at it and haven't been successful, you know, I hate to beat an old drum, but the first thing you want to make sure you have is senior management support. If they're not buying it in, you're not going to be able to have the leverage that you do with their backing. One of the things we did is once we got the senior management to say to do it, we actually reported results by the VP level. Higher ups in companies tend to be very competitive, so when you show red, green, and blue of compliance and not of non-compliance, it gets people's attention in a pretty graphic fashion. The other thing is to find the influencers in the company or some of the most challenging problems they have, and you know, accomplish a small deliverable in records management that helps build the credibility of the program, not only for you as an individual, but of the strength and the deliverables that can come out of a strong records management program. A big part of that is what's in it for me. You know, our businesses are out delivering their products and services on a daily basis. This feels like an overlay. You know, it's a governance thing, it's a compliance thing, and oh, it's just one more thing I've got to do. And if you can show them how good records management helps their operation run more cost efficiently, either on a daily basis during the normal course of business, you know, if it gets product out the door fast or what any of their initiatives they're trying to deliver, and even if it goes down to e-discovery, which is, look, you make a product or service for which we get we go into legal matters over, either for claims management or for product liability, it's going to make your e-discovery cost less if we do this well. Do you understand how it adds to the bottom line? And those business managers who oftentimes don't see the value in it, they become part of it. And then finally, again, simple. We started out with a pretty robust program, had lots of people involved and felt really good about it, and realized, you know, at the end of the day, you need a soundbite. You need an elevator speech. What is records management? What's it going to do for you? And how is I, as an end user, to be compliant, can get in, do what I need to do, what's right for the company, and get back out and get back to my day job?
I would like to jump in. This is Bruce. I agree 100% with what you've said, and it's a mistake that we made when we were improving our records management system. That was that we staffed the records retention committee with all staff organizations like legal, finance, tax, HR. We did not include representatives of the actual businesses so that they could see how this would benefit them, and we switched that around. And we had representatives of the senior representatives of each of the major business lines. They didn't want to do it, but they were invited by senior officers to participate in records retention so that they could see how it could improve the efficiency of their business areas. Again, litigation not being one of the sales items, but just being able to find their own information and share it globally.
Great comments, Jane and Bruce. Yep. I'm smiling when you say they didn't want to do it because I get that.
All right. Well, we've reached the end of the show here. I appreciate your comments. Hopefully all the litigators out there are going to listen, and maybe some of the judges. I may bring this to their attention. But I'd like to thank you, Jane, Stephen, and Bruce, for joining us on another show here. It's always a pleasure to have speakers like you share your knowledge with us and our listeners. And hopefully we'll be able to do some more shows later this year. To the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our shows. You can remember the show and the website phonetically. It sounds out as Easy Bytes of ESI information. So however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review from Jurnoff, wishing you a nice day.